Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello and welcome to this month's webinar being presented to you on behalf of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. My name is Michael Kramer, and I am the Calibration and Inspection Program Manager at PJLA, and I'm delighted that to have you all with me the end of March here for our monthly webinar. So, Section 7-8, which is reporting the results. And just thinking about this, you're a 17025 testing, calibration, or sampling organization. This is your final product. So in order to be accredited, such things are looked at, such as that you're having trained personnel, authorized personnel, you're using appropriate procedures, you have appropriate facilities, traceability as needed is being maintained, you have the tools to do the tester calibration and the equipment and standards that you're using, and you also have a handling process in place. So all these are areas which are addressed in within the standard, and what we're looking at now is the final product. So this is what your customer receives. This is the reporting your test, calibration, or sampling results. So looking at a test or calibration report, if it utilizes the symbol of your accreditation body, or if you reference accreditation, that would be considered an accredited type report. Hence, the requirements in this section here is 7-8. They will apply. I reference here, and again, I'm speaking on behalf of PJLA. We have SOP3. Which are requirements for using the PJLA symbol, which goes hand in hand with ILAC policy, and also references to accreditation. I'm going to mention it here because it's not covered under 7-8 symbol usage and accreditation references. However, just bear in mind these are other requirements for these areas. SOP3 is available on our website. Under the resource tab, and actually I believe we did a webinar back in 2021 on this very top various topics, if you care to go back and listen to the recording of that. So 17025 is for of course calibration, testing, and sampling organization. 7-8, reporting the results, is broken down in the various sections that I list this there. We have common requirements related to all three organizations, and there are specific ones related to testing, calibration, and sampling, and then overall requirements concerning making statements of conformity, opinions, and amending your reports. So looking at the requirements, 7-8. One, general requirements, and these apply to all three organizations, testing, calibration, and sampling. The results shall be reviewed and authorized prior to release. So if you listen to my webinars before, you probably heard me mention that when we see the word shall in 17025, that's a requirement. Should is a recommendation, may is a permission, but that shall is a requirement. So this is a requirement. I proposed a question by who, and I'm backtracking a little bit here. I want to look at personnel. The requirements in regards to personnel does address this. So we see under 625, the laboratory shall have procedures and retain records for the authorization of personnel. And then we're more specific here under 626, that the laboratory shall authorize personnel to perform specific laboratory activities, including but not limited to the following. And you see there under 626C. C is in cat review, excuse me, report review and authorization of results. Hence, reviewing and issuing the report, that is a requirement you're going to see that's specified here in this section. Listing the person who actually, if you issue the report, would be the person who reviewed and released it to the customer. That is somebody that the laboratory, just like folks that are authorized to do your various calibrations and tests under your scope of accreditation, you should maintain a record of those individuals who are authorized to sign off on reports. Even if it is the same person that the individuals, personnel that are doing the testing and calibration, they could be authorized to do the test and calibration or calibration. That would be one authorization. However, if they're also authorized to issue and authorize reports prior to release, that would need to be captured as well. We'll look at that a little bit more as we're going through these requirements. So 7812, the results shall be provided accurately, clearly, and unambiguously and objectively, usually in a report such as a test report or calibration certificate or report of sampling, and shall include all the information agreed with the customer and necessary for the interpretation of results, and all information required by the method used. All issued reports shall be retained as technical records. And you got to maintain your reports that you issue to your customers. We got a couple words in there, unambiguously. So what are we talking, unambiguous? Talking about your reports, and reporting your results to the customer. There are no two ways to interpret it. It should be very clear. Also, objectively, you do it with an open mind, considering the facts rather than your personal feelings. Couple notes here. I notice it's just sort of, I like to say FYI, these aren't requirements, just additional information. So basically, note one just specifies these documents can be referred to as various things, such as I'm a calibration assessor. I see most often calibration work in there, calibration certificate, calibration reports. Reports today, I'm seeing more and more electronics being used, reports being issued to customers electronically, technicians out in the field with laptops, entering data electronically and submitting reports to be authorized and reviewed, which hence would be sent to the customer electronically, more so these days. But even if you are still in the paper mode, providing paper reports to your customers, the standards does still recognize both vehicles, both electronic and paper recording for your customers. All right, 7813, and I highlight when agreement has to be made with the customer, the results may be reported in a simplified way. Any information listed in the various sections that we're about to go through that is not reported to the customer shall be readily available. So what this is stating, we're going to see a lot of shalls here. So you're under your scope of accreditation, all applicable requirements that need to be reported under 7A shall be reported. For whatever reason, if your customer does not want any of these particular requirements, and quite frankly, if a customer just wants perhaps an identification of the sample or item of the calibration that's being provided and just whether or not it met a specific tolerance, and that could still come under the realm of an accredited work. However, that has to be agreed to with the customer. And if need be, you would have to be able to go back and provide the records of all missing information there in which was not reported. However, this has got to be an agreement between yourself and the customer if any of these requirements. At the bottom of the slide here, I mentioned something that comes up often. PL3, we're specific about that with measurement uncertainty, if for whatever reason customer does not want that in there, we do require that record be maintained under determined during contract review, and it should be customer driven with that agreement. So let's leave up there for a second. So moving on to the common requirements. So again, testing, calibration, and sampling. Each report shall include at least the following, and then I hold it here, unless the laboratory has a valid reason for not doing so, thereby minimizing any possibility or misunderstanding or misuse. So first requirement there, hey, I have to pick it up, I have to see a title. What is this document? Is it a test report? Is it a calibration certificate or a sampling report? Requirement to have the name and address of your organization, the laboratory. C, the location of the laboratory activities, including when performed at the customer facilities or sites away from the laboratory's permanent facilities or in associated temporary or mobile facilities. So calibration assessments and on scopes of accreditation, we have folks that are accredited to do them in both at their fixed facility and then also at the customer's facility. What this is stating that is if perhaps you are going on site doing the calibration on site at the customer location, but you have to look at that report and see, hey, this is where the calibrations or testing was performed on site at the customer's location, was not performed at the laboratory fixed facility. A unique identification that all components are recognized as a portion of a complete and a clear identification to the end of the report. So typically I'll see like a certificate number, a test ID number associated with this. So this is a number that for this particular test that you're performing on this particular day for this particular artifact and your this particular customer is unique, cannot be repeated. So if you're using certificate numbers as your unique identifier, if a certificate number 1234, whatever it happens to be, it should be unique to this specific test or calibration that you're providing the reports for. The name and contact information of the customer. So of course, whoever your customer is, and then contact information. Ideally, if you have a go-to person there, that name or the individual that made the request, as an assessor, I look at this, perhaps that changes a lot. Perhaps you have a valid reason for not including that on there, or perhaps you don't even know. Or perhaps a department, may suffice under this information. Used to be the name and address back in 2005, the old standard. Now it's the name and contact information. Identification of the method used. Calibration, test procedure, sampling protocol. So this could be something that could be your internal lab procedure, for example, your SOP number. Or it could be a nationally recognized procedure, if that's what you're using, just as those that are published by organizations such as ASTM, USP, ASME. All right, G, a description and ubiquitous identification and when necessary, the condition of the item. So in other words, it should be clear when you look at a test calibration report, you know exactly what was tested or calibrated. Was a caliper, serial number, whatever. It was a seed sample, lot number, whatever the test may entail. Should be very clear as exactly what the test report or calibration report is directed towards. The date of receipt of the testing or calibration items and the date of sampling, where this is critical to the validity of the application of the results. So that's not, I would say, speaking on the assessments I do for calibration, is typically not an area where it's critical to the validity of the results. So in other words, if I received a caliper today and I don't calibrate it until next week, I have it in the lab, it's not going anywhere, sitting on the shelf, shouldn't affect the results. Therefore, the date of receipt would not be needed. An example of that would be shelf life. If shelf life may be critical, if a sample may degrade over time, one thing that comes to mind is moisture content. If you're calibrate, or excuse me, if you're testing for grain samples for moisture content, for example. You don't want that sitting out too long because that's going to change over a period of time. And then this is a data test or the date of calibration, the date that the actual laboratory activity was completed on the sample or artifact is being tested or calibrated. And then the date of issue of the report. So it needs to be specified on the report, even if it is the same date that is being that the report is being generated. In other words, same date as the testing or calibration. It has to be specified in two places, even if it is the same date of the issue of the report. I've seen for small organizations, even a 2 or 3 person organization, where it's quite common for the individual that was doing the actual work to also issue the report. Bear in mind, they have to be authorized to do both. And then in order to release the report, and I've seen it captured on one line before, test it and authorized by so-and-so. Hence, you're meeting that requirement there. And or it could be a larger organization that perhaps technicians are out there or in your facility. They generate the data. The report is electronically prepared. And then you have perhaps a quality person that will go back and review the reports. May not be the same day that we go back and review the report before they actually are issued to the customer. Either way, the date of issue and the individual authorizing the report is required to be captured. Okay, reference to the sampling plan and sampling method used by the laboratory or other bodies where these are relevant to the validity or application of the results. We have a whole section here in a little bit just for sampling organizations and taking samples. A statement to the effect, and this is a requirement now, results related only to the items tested, calibrate, or sampled. So this is shall now. In 2005, it said where relevant. I'm not a real big fan of this, but it is a requirement now. I think sometimes it's fairly obvious that it's particularly on reports where there's just one item on it. Moving on to M, the results where appropriate, the units of measurements. So whatever is being tested or calibrated, if it's in pounds, inches, Fahrenheit, Celsius, need to be specific as to what the units of measurements are. Any additions to deviations or exclusions from the method? See that normally captured during the in a comment section if needed. And this is the date of issue, and here is the identification of the person authorizing the report. And I'm repeating myself here, but also under 625, that person you can see is also required to have a record that they are authorized to do so, and it's very specific, as you see there, under 625C. P, identification when results are from external providers. So what we're referring to there is subcontractors. So for what, if you happen to subcontract, your work that you're performing, it needs to be identified on the report that it was from a subcontractor. And earlier in the standard under review request tenders and contracts, that need to be agreed to upfront by the customer. So this is assuming that agreement was captured. We have a note here for additional information. It may be good to include a statement that the report shall not be reproduced except in full without approval of the laboratory, and can provide insurance that parts of the reports are not taken out of context. So in other words, you don't want folks taking your report and cutting and pasting excerpts out of your report. Who knows what they're doing with it? You rather them just to, if they need to, duplicate the report to do it in its entirety. All right, 7822. The laboratory shall be responsible for all the information provided in the report, except when information is provided by the customer. Data provided by a customer shall be clearly identified. In addition, a disclaimer shall be put on the report when the information is supplied by the customer that can affect the validity of results. Where the laboratory has not been responsible for the sampling stage, sample has been provided by the customer, for example, it shall state on the report that the results applied to samples is received. So, in other words, if you're a testing organization, and I was involved in a seed testing organization, of course, we had inspectors go out to warehouses and take samples of seeds, but we also had farmers come in and want to know if their seeds are going to germinate. They would bring the sample in for us to put in our germinators. That would be we had no control over how that individual took the sample. Hence, that could, of course, affect the results as a whole there. So the standard is specific in those cases. The sample is received. I want to mention also here, and this is handled under 641, particularly for those folks that are doing work at the customer's location. Information provided by the customer may be needed to proceed with a test or calibration if environmental criteria are not within predefined limits. Typically associated with when you're going on site, it's not as environmentally friendly as perhaps your fixed laboratory location. And this is also covered under 641. So perhaps you're limited on a protocol that states you'll proceed with calibrations or testing if it's you have temperature constraints, perhaps 20 degrees C plus or minus 5 is specified in the procedure. Go to the customer location, it's out of there. This is basically stating that if the customer wants to test it anywhere, you have to put a disclaimer on the report indicating that. This is covered under 641, but I think it also falls under the realm of 7822 when you're deviating. All right, so now we're getting into specifics for just a test. So we're going to break off a little bit here for testing organizations, 7831. So all those items that we just went over in 782 are required. Other for test results, for test reports, information on specific test conditions, such as environmental conditions. Where relevant, a statement of conformity with requirements or specifications. And we have a whole section here on making statements of conformity and requirements concerning that we're going to get to when we get to 786. So if you're not understanding what I'm saying there, that's when you say something. And the example I have up here, your sample or your item passes or fails, perhaps a tolerance or a specification. You're making a statement of, compliance. Testing, still with testing, where applicable, the measurement uncertainty presented in the same unit as that measured or in the relative term or term relative to the measured, such as a percent of reading, when it is relevant to the validity or application of the test results, the customer's instructions so requires it, or the measurement uncertainty affects conformity to the specification limits. That last one there, uncertainty affects that pass-fail statement of compliance, measurement uncertainty may be needed. This is for testing labs. A little bit more stringent there with calibration. Where appropriate, opinions and interpretations. So we have another whole section we'll get to on those requirements and any additional information that may be required by specific methods, authority, customers, or groups. And then 7832, if your testing organization is also responsible for the sampling, test report shall meet the requirements listed in 785. So this is if the laboratory is actually collecting the samples to be tested. And we're going to look at those requirements here. Got a separate section for sampling. calibration. So we're going to peel off from just testing the calibration organizations, and we have a shall here. So these are required, and it doesn't say where relevant here for as in testing. It is now the measurement uncertainty of the measurement results presented in the same unit as that of the measurement as a measured. And this is copied and pasted right out of the standard, basically. And that's how it's worded in the language of 17025. That's not misspelling, or in a term relative to the measured, such as percent. So it's very specific now with calibration. It shall be reported on the report. And i.e., if you're stating your measurements are traceable, by definition, it includes the associated measurement uncertainty. There is a reference document there that's noted in the standard ISO guide 99, sort of give you some guidance in expressing uncertainty on your calibration reports. 7841 shall include the following environmental conditions that influence the measurement results. Typically, these are things like temperature, humidity, sometimes barometric pressure. Have another one down there. I'm trying to depict the adverse conditions that may affect it. What down there at the bottom is actually testing a vehicle scale outside. Hence, the environmental parameters are fairly wide for those. That is a calibrated weight cart with calibrated 1,000-pound blocks that they drive across these. However, if the wind is blowing on there and causing the indicator to perhaps drift, that is something that would need to be noticed that may impact that particular calibration. Traceability, a statement identifying how the measurements are metrological traceable. We have an appendix in 17025, Annex A, that gives you some guidance on there. Just bear in mind, and we stress this in PL2, a lot of folks like to say they're traceable to NIST. That is not correct. Yeah, it cannot be traceable to NIST, it's through NIST. You're actually traceable to the International Units of Measurements, SI, through NIST. So still with calibration labs, shall include results before and after any adjustments or repairs if available. So basically, say you're calibrating a pipette, you when it comes in there, and I like to call that as found, the same as used, because that's how your customer was using it. So they may need to know if it was within tolerance, they sent in for calibration, because if it was out of tolerance, it may have had an adverse impact on what that pipette was being used for. Hence, that's why I refer to it as used. So if for whatever reason you adjust a pipette and it varies, it could be out of tolerance, and then you can adjust them, clean them, service them, bring them within tolerance. Both those results would need to be recorded as found, as left. Where relevant, a statement of conformity with requirements or specifications. So again, talk about that a little bit here when we get to 787. 786, you're stating pass, fail, intolerance, or out of tolerance. You're making a statement of compliance. If you're not, you're not making a statement of compliance. Where appropriate, opinions and interpretations. So we'll look at that a little bit more detail in 787. This here, 7842, this is specific to calibration and sampling. If you happen to be in doing calibration and you're sampling in your calibration, then you need to meet the requirements stated in 785. However, sampling is primarily associated with testing labs and not calibration labs. Here's one I often get questions about here, 7843. A calibration certificate or calibration label shall not contain any recommendation on the calibration interval, except where this has been agreed with the customer. So a calibration, often you'll hear see a calibration recall date or a calibration due date, you know, when the item is to come back after calibration and be recalibrated. That is not required to be on the report. If it is on the report, however, that has to be customer driven. So if I see a calibration report and it has 6 months on there, typically as an assessor, I would want to see where that was customer driven, perhaps in the contract review process or a form that was filled out. Bold face, if a calibration report does not have a recall date, that is not required. But if it is on there and if it's not customer specified, then that would be a nonconformance against 7843 there. All right, so that was bringing up the rear. Here is sampling. If you're a sampling organization, so again, items that would be required on a sampling report would be the date of sampling, a unique identification of the item material sample that's being sampled, including the name of the manufacturer, the model, or the designation and serial number as appropriate. Where the laboratory is responsible for the sampling, all the requirements that were listed previously in 782 applies. Other things that for sampling organizations that would need to be included on the report is the location of the sampling, including any diagrams, sketches, or photographs. If you're going, perhaps going to a lake, taking a water sample, for example, may be applicable for 785C. And D, reference to the sampling plan and sampling method. Details of any environmental conditions during sampling that affects the interpretation of results. And then uncertainty. So information required to evaluate uncertainty. So if you're taking samples, a sample, and it's going to be brought into a test lab, that uncertainty associated with the sampling may very well be needed by the test lab to determine the total uncertainty associated with the entire test. So that's what it means for subsequent testing or calibration. If you're taking a sample, let's say the water sample, and there's an uncertainty associated with that, you're supposed to get a replica sample of a specific body of water. There could be an associated uncertainty with that may affect the actual results that are going to be given during the testing process. All right, statements of conformity. So this, again, we're gonna go back, reel in all three organizations there, testing, calibration, and sampling. So when a statement of conformity to a specification or standard is provided, the laboratory shall document the decision rule employed, taking into account the level of risk, such as false accept, false reject, and statistical assumptions associated with the decision rule employed, and apply the decision rule. So what are we referring to when we say a decision rule? This definition that is within the standard is a decision rule is a rule that describes how measurement uncertainty is accounted for when stating conformity with a specified requirement. So we'll try to illustrate that a little bit more here. And again, that's when you're stating a pass-fail. If you're not stating a pass-fail on the report, then a decision rule would be an NA. There is uncertainty to be to account. However, if you are stating a pass-fail, and what this is stating is you have to, consider uncertainty before stating whether something has passed or has failed, or let your customer know what the decision rule that was employed when you made that statement of compliance. So under 7862, the laboratory shall report on a statement of conformity such that the statement clearly identifies A, to which result applies, B, what specification standards or parts thereof are met or not met, and then C, the decision rule applied unless it is inherited in the requested specification or standard. There's a little diagram there sort of specifying what we're talking about here with the decision rule. I have leave on the next slide something a little bit more clear for you folks to look at there. There we go. So here are several cases we have. The little diamond-shaped picture there you have with the two end bars there. That's the actual, say, let's say the calibration results. And then those little areas leading with the end bars there, they would be the gray area, measurement uncertainty. And that's what that is, uncertainty. Hey, we're not sure, you know, this could fall anywhere between where that diamond is and then where their two on end bars are. So if we look at the first, making a statement of compliance, stating that it falls within this upper and lower limit here, we look at case study A, we can see that the value and the whole degree of uncertainty are all engulfed within the upper and lower limit. Hence, that would be a pass. It's clearly depicted, even when we take uncertainty into account. Case B, we have if you look at that, we see the uncertainty is drifting over on the other side of the limit there. So even though the result may actually pass when we take uncertainty into account, we're not so sure because it's not a clear pass or fail. Then we look at case study C, it could be the other way around. It could just barely fail. However, if we see case study C is sort of creeping over to the pass limit, so it's not a clear failure there because it may pass if you take uncertainty into account. So, and last but not least, case study D. We have case D. We have a value and we have the lines of uncertainty, and we look at both of them and they both fall outside the limit. So that would be a case where you could clearly state, even with taking measurement uncertainty into account, that we have failures there. They're not intolerance. It's not a pass, it's a fail. However you elect to communicate your statement of compliance. So one thing with the decision rule, under contract review, under 713, and whatever decision rule you have on your report, it needs to be agreed to by the customer. And that is, it's got to be accepted by the customer. And that is specified under 713. So if you are truly guard manning, most speaking on behalf of calibration, most are doing a K equals two or approximately a 95% confidence interval. And if you are truly guard manning, you could state that accounting for the uncertainty will be taken to mean that a 95% confidence level that the measurement results plus and minus the expanded uncertainty at K equals two shall be totally within the specification limits. So in other words, if it is, you can safely say pass or fail. If it's not, then you can't just straight up say pass or fail. You'll have to alert your customer that uncertainty may possibly affect those statements of compliance. Before we revised PL3, which is our policy on measurement uncertainty, we gave a little bit more guidance on that. We coined the frame, not making this a requirement, but instead of saying passing determinant, or when uncertainty actually may affect it, or fail and determine it. When I was on the calibration side of the table, I used to put a little asterisk next to those points and then define it at the bottom what that meant. A guidance document. So ILAC has a very good guidance document, G8, which it goes into a lot of detail about the various types of decision rules and about the risk of false accept or false reject. G8, if you want a little bit more detailed information, I did give a webinar on here. It should be on our website, past webinars, where I sort of go into this document in a little bit more detail, go over various scenarios within that webinar. What I mentioned here, and I also go in more detail with some more examples as far as testing labs, where there are messes that determine how the rules are applied. One good common illustration is ASTM E18 for Rockwell hardness, where the testing and calibrations decision rules take uncertainty into account effectively in the repeat testing and other limits as the spread of the data, etc., and the rules are defined within the method. That is a possibility. So here's an example here with E18, how decision rules could be already incorporated within the method. All right, opinions and interpretations, 787. When opinions and interpretations are expressed, the laboratory shall ensure that only personnel authorized for the expression of the opinions and interpretations release their respective statements. The laboratory shall document the basis upon which these opinions and interpretations have been made. So I'm sort of going to repeat myself here a little bit with what I was stating about with issuing the report. Whoever gives opinions or interpretations has to be authorized. This is covered under personnel 626. You can see shall authorize personnel to perform specific laboratory activities, including but not limited to the analysis of results, including statements of conformity or opinions and interpretations. So again, just wanted to stress here how it need to be documented, but however, you also need to take into account the personnel that is reporting that opinion or interpretation. The opinions and interpretations expressed in report shall be based on the results attained from the tested or calibration items and shall be clearly identified as such. When opinions and interpretations are directly communicated by dialogue, this is an interesting requirement. Well, you already issued the report with the customer. A record of the dialogue shall be maintained. So, i.e., with your maintain a copy of your test or calibration report. This is also stating perhaps after the fact that a record would be need to be maintained of this dialogue between you and your customer here under 7873. Amended report. So you issued a report, you forgot to put something on it, you need to add to the report, or perhaps you have to reissue a report. That's what we're referring to here. So when an issued report needs to be changed, amended, or reissued, any change of information shall be clearly identified and where appropriate, the reason for the change included in the reports. Amendments to a report after issue shall be made only in the form of further documentation or data transfer, which includes the statement amendment to report, serial number, or otherwise identified or equivalent form of wording. Such amendment shall meet all the requirements of this document. So we're sort of supplementing the report here. When I was, most of the time I see when a mistake is made on the report or you have to change it, most of the time I would say you just reissue the report. So this is stating here, when it is necessary to issue a complete new report, it shall be uniquely identified and shall contain reference to the original that it replaces. So for whatever reason, the report was issued to the customer. Heck, it's got the wrong date on it. It's got the wrong serial number. You decide just to go ahead and reissue the report. Just can't just make those changes and reissue it. The standard says you have to give it a unique identifier. Give a simplified example in there. So if my original report was certificate number 1234, I could change that, give it a unique identifier, certificate number 1234AR, AR standing for amended report. Then I have to reference the report that it replaces. Therefore, I would state clearly under that, this is just an example. This report replaces certificate number 1234. So, I believe that brings us to the end of the slide presentation. So bear with me here. I'll see what kind of questions. I got a few of them here, so I'm going to take them one by one here. Get a second here just to read through. So, Okay, first question here is related to 7820, where that is a requirement. You have to identify the individual authorizing the report. Does a person name suffice or this requirement, or should the title also be included? The requirement, don't want to make it basically says the identification of the person. So if you only have, say, one person in your organization named John Smith, there's no requirement that you have to list their title. Some folks like to list the title as well, but it's not required. In the case of calibration, when it is required to report the receiving date of equipment, if for whatever reason, like I gave the example of a caliper, got it in today and I'm not going to calibrate it until next week. It's not required to have the date that it was received, but that's the date we're referring to. If it's needed, if it's going to affect the tester calibration, I gave the example of moisture testing. If I got it today, I left it out and I'm going to test it a week from now. Hey, that's going to change the integrity of that content. So yes, that would be the actual, if it's needed. Just read through it again. That would be the receiving date of the equipment. If you're calibrating, the data came into your facility. That would be the, you log it into the system there and you would have to capture that. So if it said, if your protocol says you have to calibrated within 24 hours, then you would need to capture that date there. Got a little bit more clarity. I'm just barely seeing these one at a time. I got a little bit of more about that last question here. And it just wanted me to expand here. I mean, is it required to, and I'm reading directly as it was typed, receive the date of the item? If it is required, yes, that's the date that you receive it. And I just gave you an example. And like I said, I've done calibration. I have never seen, personally, it's not saying it's not out there, when that would be required for calibration. I have was involved before with testing tobacco, grains, wherever, where it needed to be tested or calibrated relatively within a set time period, or the integrity of the sample would be affected. Yeah, this here I don't think has anything to you know, as far as being on a report. Can I recommend a customer not to use a calibration equipment that was close to fail, or the decision is left to the customer? Let's take a look here a little bit, see exactly how that's worded. First of all, you have to be authorized to give that opinion if it is going to be your turn. And if you look at the requirement under 7872, I would think perhaps you might want to include that under 7873, where you're going to do it by dialogue. It might be kind of hard to document there, but however, if you're basing it on the results obtained from the tested or calibration items, that should be clearly identified as such. So I don't know if you have a preference for a specific make or model or whatever. I don't think that would be considered appropriate to be put on a calibration report unless the results were telling you otherwise. Again, that's 787. And so I'm just speaking on behalf of the requirements of 17025. If you want to have a conversation with your customer about the specific issue, then under 7873, this is being communicated with dialogue. You could keep it away from the report. However, just keep it, maintain a record of that dialogue with the report. All right. from down under Cape Town. Hey, we got you folks from all over. Hey, appreciate the kind words there. Because you're up kind of late there listening to my webinar today. So if you follow your reference. And isn't and I'm a calibration person. I know there's a lot of different calibrations and a lot of different types of testing there. And I'm going to try to answer. Give what I think would be the correct answer, but this looks like it's specific to a test that I'm not versed in. And if anybody else would like to chime in, type in here. Here's the question. So if we follow a reference method that state it has a sensitivity of 90%, a positive and a negative predicted value of 90% or more, can we just reference this in our statement of conformity / measurement uncertainty? And I would say, I would think so. I'm putting think there. I'm not going to say for sure because I'm not specific, I'm not versed on the specific, I guess it's a specific test you're referring to. So I don't want to lead you astray. But if anybody else out there, feel free to type it in and sort of get some more feedback on that one there. What remarks need to be indicated for subcontracted tests? Just needs to be identified, and that could be, I would say, probably an asterisk or some sort of mark next to those results, and identify that asterisk perhaps at the bottom of the report. However, like I mentioned, this is reporting. However, the standard does require, if you're going to be subcontracting, you have to gain your customer's approval. So ideally, yes, your customer would be aware of that anyway. However, you need to also identify it on the report. I'm not requiring that, but that seems like the logical way to do it is sort of like an asterisk and then identify what that asterisk is to reports or from a subcontractor, not from your own facility. All right. I think I've reached the end to the questions. Very good questions. Appreciate, again, everybody joining us. And without further ado, I'm going to announce next month's webinar, which is already scheduled. You can already register for this on our website, Friday, April 29th. We're going to look at the requirements in the standard. We're going to combine both document control and records control of records. So we will go over those requirements, and hopefully you all be able to join us for our April webinar. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your day or evening, wherever you happen to be coming from here. See you next month.